Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Fat and Ugly was the theme tune that of my life for at least a good 6 to 7 years.
Wow. Living in an era where, or living in a time now where like weight loss surgery is a big thing, it is also quite discouraging. How do you balance this desire to be desired with self-acceptance? Not that the two are mutually exclusive, but sometimes people position it as one can cancel out the other.
Hello and welcome to the Two My Sisters podcast. I'm Renee
and I'm Courtney, and we are your online sisters and hosts of the Two My Sisters podcast.
Now, we are all about promoting the wellness, growth and development of a community of sisters across the world.
And in today's conversation, we are going to be discussing body dysmorphia, insecurities, battling the male gaze, and so much more. Girlies are in need of some encouragement, some loving, because I feel like with the evolution of our bodies as women, it can just be an ongoing battle to learn to love yourself. And so we're going to be discussing our own personal experiences, things we've learned, especially as we've grown up a little since we last had this conversation, and how we have leveraged friendship to kind of make us divest from the male gaze.
That's great. That's
great. But before we get into the conversation, of course, as always, we have some housekeeping announcements.
Sweep the house, sweep the house, sweep the house.
So by the time you listen to this, we have long since been back from South Africa. But we said to actually, you know, relax our nerves a little bit. We would record an episode just to stay on top of the consistency.
So we don't
have an update as to how South Africa went. You'll have to tune in to next week's episode to hear about our little recap regarding that. But we know that it, your nails are so cute,
thank you.
We know we know that it will be an amazing trip, and we hope that we can come with some very good news
for sure. Super exciting. I mean, just judging off of the love that we've received from the South Africa girlies, listen, just girlies from the continent, you guys always show up and we love it, and we want to be there full time. We're working on it. So thank you so much for the outpouring of love that we have received. Like, we haven't even arrived, but we already know what the warm welcome that awaits us in South Africa. Honestly, thank you guys. And also, apologies to the Cape Town girlies if we don't make it happen. If we haven't made it happen, we are going to make it happen. We are working tirelessly to make it happen. We definitely underestimate.
But talking about Cape Town, if you would like for us to come to your city at any point, like, let us know. Where should we come to next?
Because we don't know.
Saying TMS World Tour and all of that. So let us know, like, where do you want us to be?
Where are we popping up? Where are we doing up sisterhood link ups, you know? Crazy.
If you don't tell us, we won't know. We won't know. So let us know where you're at, where we should come to. Highest votes wins, can't lie.
Literally, because the Cape Town girlies, highest the way they arose wins. And showed, goodness.
So yes, goodness. Are there any other housekeeping stuff?
Well, not necessarily a housekeeping, but more so just maintenance. You know, our book is out, our paperback
is out.
Come on.
February is the month our paperback book came out. We're actually having a party very soon.
Yeah.
To just celebrate, to just celebrate TMS and everything that has happened for us and to us in the last 3 years of doing this podcast, including our new book. Is it old? It's more of a refresh.
It's more of a refresh. But she's so pretty.
Oh, the girls have been complimenting the blue, man.
You know what? I think what's beautiful about it is that it's blue.
Yes.
I think sometimes we think of, like, you know, female oriented sisterhood is always pink. And obviously our hardback was a really nice shade of coral pink, but we thought, let's do like the royal blue.
Yeah.
It's giving a royalty about
it. I really, really like it.
You should get it.
Serious book.
You should get
it. So definitely get it for your bookshelf. It's absolutely gorgeous. But even more importantly, inside is packed with so much wisdom and gems about building lifelong friendship, unlocking the life-changing power of female friendships. And so we really hope that you enjoy it. And to the sisters who have already got the book, right? 1 year strong.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. But I have a request. You know how I'm always shouting, like, rate us 5 stars. We need is for you to actually rate us on Amazon please.
Mm-hmm.
It would be really, really good for us as authors and for our book in general to just have some really good reviews there. So please let us know how you found the book. Did you enjoy it? What do you think people can take away from it? So go onto Amazon, search for our book, search for your purchase, and just leave a review. Please, it would really, really, really help us. To all the sisters around the world who have read it, please leave an Amazon review if you can. Yeah, that's my housekeeping.
Yeah, I think the house is actually swept. We're coming towards the end of February by the time you guys are listening to it. So
crazy.
We hope it's been going well.
Yeah. LOL.
It's a it's a leap year, so make
what
sure that you're
National Renee Month. So you
it
know.
Is, yeah. No, Point National Renee Month. You know, we're still coming in strong. If you are following me and following our pages, you will know that I will have been insufferable this month. That's my plan. I'm speaking it into existence. So hopefully you'll be able to have, you know, looked back and been like, oh, wow, Renee was insufferable on all social media platforms, because I will completely like just remove myself in March. So enjoy. I hope you've been having a great time. I hope God has blessed you abundantly in this month. What I love about February as well is it's one of those months that is so unassuming. Like, what people do don't mean? Like, when people think of like months that they love to enjoy and have fun, they think of the summer months, or like when you think of the winter months, it's very much winter cadence. I feel like February is one of those like weird, almost in between months.
I hear you, but I feel like because you have Valentine's Day.
That's true. But then if you don't have a Valentine, sometimes folks can be like,
but still,
I'm not
you remember
celebrating.
It for that, don't you?
which is why we need to find another national another holiday thing. To eclipse the depression.
Or it's the month with 28 days. That's very unique.
There you go.
Yeah, 29. If
and
it's a
this,
year,
exactly, like this year is a leap year. So praying that everybody gets their lucky leap this year, especially this month. So
amen to that. That's wonderful. What is an actual unassuming month, though? August is a bit strange. Unless you're a summer kid, like
a
school kid,
sorry.
You've got the summer holidays.
October.
Halloween. Mm. But I hear October. I hear October. Very, very June.
Yeah.
Very mundane.
I know people's with their birthdays in June will be like.
Yeah, I know. That's their birthday month. I kind of feel like May is like that. A bit. May is my birthday month,
I feel
so obviously
like
it means something to me.
May for me, because I have at least 5 people I know that have birthdays.
There's a
maybe
lot
6
of people born in May.
So when was everybody's
May
parents knacking before?
I want to say September.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when the people were out here doing their thing, man.
And then the November babies, what were they?
February.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vowels.
Everybody. Yeah, so obvious. Your
like,
parents
November
were just...
November babies are currently being made.
Shacking up.
Yeah.
Wow, November babies are currently being made.
I love that.
Oh, shout out to all the sisters that are pregnant and don't know about it yet.
Woo,
you don't have to worry about me.
Woo, okay, well,
wow.
There is
knocking.
Someone who is worried about something. So let's get into the ding, ding, ding.
Dilemma.
Let's go, cool. Hi, Courtney and Renee.
Hi.
I'm 17 years old and I've been loving your work from the time I was 15. You've really been the big sisters I need.
Oh, I love it, girl.
My dilemma is quite tricky and lengthy, so I apologize for that in advance.
Mm-hmm.
To be very honest, sis, compared to some of the things we get, it's actually
this
very
is,
good.
Yeah.
You're all good. My best friend and I met in our final year of high school,
mm-hmm.
and we've been friends for about 2 years. She was in boarding school and I was in day, so it was a long distance friendship.
Mm-hmm.
In November last year, we both got into the same uni.
Yep.
Accommodation is quite hard and mine is taking long to be approved.
Mm-hmm.
So she gave an open invitation to go live with her if I wanted to. I recently took her up on her offer and lived with her for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
In the first week, she started to claim that her things were missing and I felt as if she was accusing me. I'm a law student and she is in STEM. So we have hectic classes and some of her other friends frequently pass by her room. Then she would use accusatory words when something happened, like this one time her thermostat for her fridge was moved and she blamed me. I asked someone to lift her fridge and I cleaned it up. I asked her if she was comfortable with me being in her space, and she said she was, but her actions were not really matching up. Furthermore, one of her male friends has been vibing me and he didn't tell her about it. So in our little chat, we discussed it and she was okay with it. But in our second week of living together, she was very distant and acted like I was invading her space. So I left that weekend and came back home, which is a 30-minute drive to school. Our mutual friends and her roommate think we should have a conversation, but I think I did my part when I asked her if she was fine with everything. I don't know what to do, and I don't want to lose her as a friend because she was really there for me last year. My mum said that when my accommodation issue is sorted, I should give her a gift of thanks and mind my own business afterwards. And I don't know what to do now. Thank you for any advice you give. A sister from Zambia.
Oh, a sister from Zambia. Shout out to our Zambian girlies. Thanks for sending in your dilemma, sis.
Yeah.
It is a tough one because I think that friendships are often tested when you are in very close quarters and close proximities, especially something like moving in with someone, no matter how short it is, right? Yeah. So I'm so sorry that you had that experience. It can be really tight and tough. And as much as we often like to think that we are good people and, you know, we hope for the best, and we hope that when we are in those kind of circumstances that we'd behave the best, sometimes that's not necessarily the case, and that's okay. Shout out to Mumsy.
Yeah.
I think that she was definitely right in terms of, you know, giving a gift of thanks or at least appreciating your friend for giving that space. I think it can be quite easy to kind of go on the offensive as opposed to recognize the fact that your friend actually did a good thing in offering you an opportunity to stay with her during a hard time. No one can deny that that was a nice thing and a nice gesture. So I think your mum was definitely right in terms of, let me acknowledge my friend and say thank you at least for that. I think that because you actually want to continue this friendship and because you are not prepared to lose your friend, it is worth having a follow-up conversation. I think the initial conversation that you had, I don't know how conducive it was for you to have a very transparent conversation about how both of you were feeling. So kind of asking, oh, is everything okay? I can imagine just within the scope of a relationship, it's not necessarily an opener per se. And I don't think you gave yourself the opportunity to share with your friends some of the tensions that arose, right? And I think what makes it even more difficult to have been able to address it whilst you were living with her is that you're in her space. So I think now that you're actually at home, you're getting your accommodation sorted out, yes, give your friend the gift of thanks, but also think about having a follow-up conversation now that both of you have had a little bit of distance from that period to kind of address some of the issues that both of you had and maybe lead in with, hey, I appreciate you so, so much for the things that you did for me during that time. It was a tough time and you gave me a space to live. Here's my gift of thanks. And because I really value this friendship, I really want to kind of create a space for us to share some of the tensions that arose from that period. And hopefully there will be, you know, the benefit of the doubt. Obviously, we cannot control what her response would be. So I think be aware of that and be cognizant of the fact that whilst you may enter the conversation with the best of intentions, you can't control the response. But I think there's ways that you can go about it to minimize, you know, her potentially going off on the defensive whilst still honoring the fact that you have some pertinent tensions that you need to bring up, as well as the emotions that she undoubtedly felt that were undealt with and you undoubtedly felt that were not dealt with. I think in terms of the accusations and all that kind of, you need to bring that up ASAP, because there is nothing like that kind of tension, feeling like your friend stole something from you, but also equally feeling like you're the thief of the situation. It sounds like you are not. I'm not gonna say, listen, because we don't have all the facts. I ain't calling you a thief or nothing at all, but I think it's worth sharing with your friend how undignified that made you feel and kind of highlight, okay, there's, first of all, it's a very disrespectful thing, especially because she didn't address it directly. It seems to be because of the proximity in space, it was very difficult for you guys to have direct conversations. So I think address how undignified it made you feel, but also the lack of directness and clarity made you feel even more uncomfortable. I think it also didn't help that both of you have very hectic schedules. Shout out to both of you pursuing really incredible, really you know, stuff. You know, a STEM babe and a lawyer. Yeah, it's literally every African parent's dream. So it is true that both of you guys are in very intense professions, or you're hoping to be in very intense professions. So I think a nod to that as well, right? That sometimes these tensions can arise as a result of the pressures that both of you guys are feeling at this time. In terms of the vibing with the male friend and stuff like that, that one is also a T for type one. I think it's worth having a conversation about comfortability and also talking to your friend and directly addressing the fact that you felt some distance as a result of you sharing that you and the male friend may have been pursuing something. I think there may be something undisclosed there. I don't know, but it's worth, again, if this is your friend and you want to continue having an intimate relationship with her, that's not something that you can hide, especially because that's her friend as well.
Absolutely.
So yeah, sis, I think this is one of those ones where it's happened. You're now sorting yourself out. You are now getting your accommodation sorted. You have some distance, so you're not in the same space as her. But I think it's worth having a follow-up conversation after you've created the parameters through which you can have the conversations, right? So creating the safety, making sure that you address every single thing that has annoyed you or the tensions that have arisen, but also making sure that you frame that conversation around the fact that this is your friend, you love them dearly, and you want to continue this relationship. Yeah. So yeah, that's what I would say.
I completely agree with that. I think you're spot on. I think the advice your mum gave you is really, really good. I think sometimes, as close as our friendship can be, everyone is just different when, like you said, there is an extreme amount of closeness because you live together. And that can just show you like the worst sides of people. Maybe your friend is not used to living with somebody at all, or living with family, or it sounds as well, because you said she has a roommate, it kind of sounds like you guys are sharing the same room. And that is very intense, especially when you're also very busy. And she may be very particular about stuff, like you mentioned about the thermostat with the refrigerator, or you know, things are going missing and she's kind of pinning it on you. I do think you sound very innocent in this case, and I don't think it's nice to be accused of anything. So I agree with you. I think you need to bring up, listen, I understand that this is not maybe the best living situation for us both, and I really do appreciate you allowing me to live here, but I don't appreciate the accusations. I would never do something like that, and it really does feel like an attack on my character, and I just want to be on the same page. Are you still comfortable with me being here? And I think really ask open-ended questions, like, how has our living arrangement kind of made you feel now that we're in the flow of actually studying? Do you feel like this is still conducive for you, your schedule, where your headspace is at? Do you want your own space back? Kind of just ask her these questions, because at the end of the day, as much as she's your friend, you're not entitled to her space. And if her feelings have changed, maybe she is struggling to articulate that she actually doesn't want you there anymore. And I know it can sound harsh, but everyone has their own, you know, particulars about their space. And so, given that your university campus is only 30 minutes drive away from home, I would see if you could consider going back home for a little bit of time. I know there may be a long commute, don't know what your access is to like a vehicle to drive and what public transport is even saying. But if it is that, you know, this situation is becoming a little bit hostile and you don't want to lose your friendship, maybe distance could make it better. And so maybe consider going back home till your accommodation is sorted. The only reason why I suggest that is because it's a short-term solution. Like your accommodation will eventually come through, and potentially see if there's another friend you could stay with for a little bit of time. But I think your mum is right in saying, you know, give her a gift, tell her you're thankful, but maybe distance is the best thing versus trying to force this situation to happen. You've tried it, it doesn't seem to be working out too well. I think it's worth voicing out how you feel to your friend and giving them the platform to voice out how they feel to you. But I don't think the immediate result of that should be, oh, we're gonna stay in this living arrangement. It doesn't sound like it's working. So for the sake of your friendship, move back home.
Get out of there, girl. Get out of there,
move back home if you can. Because it just sounds very stressful and like a strain on your relationship, at no fault of your own, but it just, you know, we live together and it is a huge learning curve. Luckily it's worked out well in our case. But I think even when we moved in together, there were sides to each other which we saw, which we had not seen before because of proximity. You know, so it happens. It's not an indication of her being a bad person. I think it's just different spaces, separate spaces.
And that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man.
Well, sisters, we hope that was, well, sister, we hope that was helpful. Sisters, if you have advice, please drop them in the comments. Let us know your perspective. Have you had a roommate, a housemate before? Have you had to, you know, crash on a girlfriend's couch?
Listen.
Let us know how that went. Give us some advice for our little sis. And all the best, sis, in your studies as well. Keep us for updated sure. on that.
To the both of you. Yes. And also, if the other sister is listening into this podcast episode, because she could be. Go talk to your babes,
go
man.
Go talk to your friend, man. Because this could be one big sleepover.
Literally. You know? Literally.
Fun times. All right. Well, into the main conversation. Body dysmorphia, yes. Insecurities, the male gaze, ugh, ETC,
being a girl. Yeah, being a, AKA being a woman.
Being a girl. How has your relationship with your body changed as you've gotten older? You know, you're 27 now.
Mid 27.
Oh my gosh,
big girl. I'm just a girl. That has
where's
been...
that song from?
It's like one of those shows, like a Nickelodeon. Yeah, one of those.
I'm just a girl.
I think that's the best. It's been ringing in my head for the past like 2 weeks.
That is really funny.
But yeah, my relationship with my body, it has improved dramatically as I've gotten older.
Talk to
dramatically.
Us. Talk to us,
babes. I think when I was younger, so I think I've shared a lot about my like physical journey. When I was a kid, I was definitely on the chubbier side, definitely got bullied for it. And having that prolonged season of despising myself and despising my body, even as I was changing my body, I still had a very poor relationship with my body. And that was where the body dysmorphia kicked in, right? So yeah, when I was younger, definitely on the bigger side, had the aunties always, you know, kiki and saying, you know, when are you going to lose weight? When I was like 11, and I'm like, well, I can't do that. I have parents. You should talk to them about that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, parental responsibility. there's not that much I can do. And just the reality of navigating a world where you were different from the norm, right? Where everything and everyone that was desirable, you were not it. And I think I've also shared this before, but the story of like one of the first guys I ever liked, me telling my friend and she saying, you know, you ain't cute. And he don't think that you're cute, because the words, I kid you not, word for word was, he thinks you're fat and ugly.
Hey, God. Every time I hear this, right, it gets worse. It gets worse. Blood so, of Jesus.
You know what I mean? Can you imagine
talk
being like
an assassination
fam,
attempt.
Can you imagine being like 13 or 14 and the first like proper crush you have, your friend, not even the guy himself, but your friend actually comes to tell you he thinks that you're fat and ugly, and the fact that he actually even shared those words with her. God, is your friend your friend?
Pause.
Yeah.
Do you think he actually said that?
I don't know, you know.
I don't think he did.
Wow.
Your friend was an op.
Wow.
I don't think he said that.
Her name's not Adrienne, but Adrienne, if you're listening to this, you're an op.
I don't.
You're not good.
I don't think that. Because I think even if he said that, for your friend to relay it to you with those same words,
it's
your friend was an op.
It's like, not
no. But I also don't see a guy... even at our tender age, like boys used to be horrible sometimes. And girls, we as teenagers, we were just
terrible.
Rats, weren't we? But I don't see him being like, oh, she's fat and she's ugly. He could have said you were dead. Do you know what I mean? But I think
Jesus.
He then translated it into a way that was like...
sinister.
Do you get what I mean? So I don't...
Sinister.
I think your friend was an op. Sorry, trust
me. I've done the reflection and I've realized that some of the folks you call your friends are not your friends. So yeah, fat and ugly was the theme tune my life for at least a good 6 to 7 years. Wow. And it's very unfortunate that, especially for young women or like young girls, to have those kind of experiences where people actively try to break down your self-esteem, or they don't realize the power of their words in creating the world. So for me, in my world, I was fat and ugly. Secondary school, went to an all girls secondary school, and we went to one of those girls schools where, you know, because we are sisters, cue the cheetah girls and all that kind of jazz. So having that buffer, or having that community of women who were very similar to me, went through the, you know, same experiences, whatnot, gave me a bit of a buffer, but it wasn't enough for me to check out of the fact that I was undesirable.
Right.
At that age, I was undesirable by men.
Right.
It was only until, I believe, when I got into kind of like my sixth form and then into university that I was obviously around a lot more men. I went to a mixed university. even though I went to a mixed university, I wouldn't say that the folks that I was looking for were there, but it's okay. We move.
Interesting.
We move.
Mixed by gender.
Yeah, mixed by gender, but by other metrics of diversity.
Not so much.
Lacking.
Yeah.
Lacking. But you know what? Nah, let me leave that for the TMS hot takes.
That's funny.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, going to university and having all of these experiences ringing through my head and still having a very poor relationship with my body. But now I was in an environment where desirability was not just to be a particular body, but also to be a particular like race, yeah. Right? Like I was in a predominantly white institution and the folks that people found desirable in that environment were skinny white girls. And I was the opposite of that, complete opposite. I often refer to, well, most of the black students at that time, the chocolate chips and the cookies. So even that was constantly reinforcing, even though it wasn't as active as, you know, you're fat and ugly, the environment was basically affirming I was fat and ugly. Mm. So I think it was my second year of university that I was like, oh, I'm going to make a change to my life and change my body and change my appearance. And it was very unfortunate that I did it the really unhealthy way and developed an eating disorder and ended up doing, I laugh about it now, but then when I think about it and think about my mindset at that time and think about how much I hated myself, I wish I didn't spend so much time keying into what people thought of me or allowing those words to shape my perception of myself.
Yeah.
So I was doing the whole waking up at dawn, running. I hate running. I still hate running. Mm. I think after 30 minutes, I think it's a boring endeavor, but everyone that runs, I love it for you, just not for me. Mm-hmm. I was running, I was eating. I think when I was looking at like my fitness pal from like 2018 and 2017 and whatnot, my fitness pal was like 500 calories a day between 500 to 800 calories a day. And whenever I ate over, I would feel so guilty and like disgusted with myself. And I'll think, oh gosh, I have to make it up by running another mile or whatever. So I lost weight very, very quickly, but I still had a really bad relationship with my body. And I was being affirmed by everyone around me. Everyone was saying, oh my gosh, Renee, you've lost so much weight. Like you look so good. But internally I was still thinking I'm fat and ugly. Mm-hmm. I must've lost like maybe 30 pounds, 40 pounds. And I'm still in my head saying, Renee, you're fat and ugly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until an intervention with my brother, God bless him. Mm. Shout out, Brian. Shout He's even to listening Brian. To this podcast right now. It wasn't until I had an intervention. He was like, Renee, I've noticed that you've been losing a lot of weight, all that kind of stuff. And I was very unhappy with my body because I didn't have the body shape that I wanted. I didn't have the body that everybody was desiring or lusting after. And he was like, you should try weightlifting. Mm. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And he was like, if you're going to do that, because my brother has also similarly gone through a body transformation. Yeah. We were like the two like chubby kids when we were younger. And he transformed, he went through almost the same journey as me, whereby he completely transformed his body. That guy he still has a six pack.
Oh yeah, yeah. Brian's doing amazing. He is
fitness master of the universe.
Honest to God.
And
like, to give you context, last year, I think he did a challenge where he did 365 days of gym and
can
exercise.
Can you imagine?
And he did it.
Every single day.
The
there wasn't
of discipline.
Kuni, there was not a day that I didn't look at this guy's stories.
And he was on it. Me too. I said, whoa.
Sometimes I had to minimize it. Okay, sir. You got to wrap it up.
I was in his inbox frequently, just clap emojis, just, clap emojis.
Just
killing it.
And but he went on holiday as well. He was still doing it anyways. Anyways.
Me that I'm even behind 4 days from my steps.
Stop.
Hell.
This one. But you know what killed me about you when you did that 23K steps?
Today's another one, cool. Renee. So it's okay.
We have to get, we need to do standing podcasts at this point.
A walking pod. The problem is I want a walking pad.
Yeah.
One, we'll get to my story anyway.
Yeah.
They have a weight limit.
Yeah.
And two, where the hell am I going to keep it? I live in a London new build.
And you know what's funny? There was somebody, guys, sorry for the tangent. I saw a walking pad and someone was like, oh, this is for those of you that don't have little space. Courtney, this walking pad was this big. I said, I will step and fall off that walking pad. There is not enough treadmill space for this nonsense.
So yeah.
But yeah, my brother intervened and he said, the kind of body that you're after, you need to eat food. Like, you actually need to eat real food. And he calculated my macros and he was like, how much are you eating? I said like between 500 to 800 calories. He said, are you actually sick?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it looks like, it sounds like I am. And it took a good, I want to say 2 to 3 months before I said, you know what? I'm going to give this a go because I feel so bad in myself. Mm. Like, not just physically, I was tired, I was drained. So yeah, I just felt bad internally. I decided to increase my calories to 1,800. Night and day.
Yeah.
I said, oh, food is good. And then he was like, you're still under eating. Yeah. You need to eat at least 2,200, 2,300. That's like basic. And I was like, oh, I'm so scared. He's like, well, what's going to happen? And I was so deathly afraid of putting on weight. Long story short, I actually increased my calories to around like 3,000 because I was eating so much under the amount that is necessary for my body. I actually had to go through a period of overeating to correct. Like, there was so many like unforeseen like issues that has as a result. English,
it's okay.
Whew.
You'll get there.
I will. Somebody that's 27. There was so many unforeseen ramifications of my decision to undereat. Like, my period was coming less late. Yeah, it was coming late. It was much more sporadic. I was constantly exhausted. I was mentally drained. Mind you, I'm juggling this with, at the time I was ACS president, but I was also doing this committee in my second year of university and studying. So it was a really, really tough time. But then having that experience and then also having my brother as my support system and seeing the journey that he had made saved my life, like genuinely saved my life. Even as I was going to the gym, even as I was seeing the results, I was still having a poor relationship with my body. I was still thinking, oh, I need to look this certain way aesthetically. And it's really interesting how you can be doing all of the right things. You can be transforming your body. You can be doing all the things that people look at you and say, oh my gosh, you're so inspiring. And yet internally, you still hate yourself. Mm. And honestly speaking, I'm like 27. I think I was 23 or 24 when I can properly say I was happy in myself, like happy with the way that my body looked and felt. And it wasn't attached to, funnily enough, how I looked, because I got to the place of where I felt comfortable with how I looked because I started to become quote unquote desirable. Yeah. It was okay. Now your bum is lifting. Now, you know, the fupa is going a little bit, but still I was seeing insecurities. Yeah, I was still seeing imperfections. And it wasn't until I made the conscious decision to start training for functionality, start training for how I feel. But also when I really reconnected with God that I realized, I don't need to do anything to be loved.
Yeah.
I'm already loved.
That's so good.
And switching your mindset from having to constantly do works in order to be loved is different to operating from a place of love. So respecting my body, no longer doing the extremities of, you know, working out. I still work out, but I do it because I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that my body is perfect in the way that society wants a woman to look, but I'm really happy with how my body looks. Yeah. I'm comfortable in myself. Yeah. There were days where I felt uncomfortable wearing like bikinis, for example, because I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I've got a little bit of tummy or like cellulite or whatnot. I have a real body and I'm really happy with the way that it looks. I'm really happy with the fact, okay, I've got a little bit of a tummy. Okay, who's going to beat me? Nobody. Do you know what I mean? So that was my journey with my body in a long-winded way. I went through a lot. And when I reflect on my relationship with my body and the misfortune of having people speak those kind of words into my life at that time, I realized just how important it is to promote body positivity. Right. And not necessarily body positivity as a look, but actually, how do you feel within your body and what's your relationship like with your body? Do you honor your body or are you constantly in a cycle of punishing your body because you don't match up to what society says is desirable? Mm. And looking at things like exercise or physical well-being as an act of self-care and not as an attempt to fit into the norm.
That's so good.
So that was me.
That's really good. I really enjoyed that.
I've been hugging the mic, but
my body is banging, man.
I'm trying.
But I got a little something. You got a six pack now.
Okay, somebody.
Sometimes I got it in the morning after I've eaten those chicken wings, baby girl.
That's the reality. Do you get me? That's like you said, you've got a real body. That's what real bodies do.
Child.
I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that openly. And so honestly, I think mine is a very similar journey of growing up. I mean, you said you were chubby as a kid. I'm chubby now. I'm big now. I'm big all my life.
All my life. I had to fight.
I'm just built this way. Oh my God. I'm just built like this. I think one thing growing up, like my dad was very affirming of the fact that, like, listen, you come from a family, the women be built like you.
They be thick.
The women be big.
They be thick.
And similarly, like, my mom was just kind of like, you know, there are some people in our family, like genetically, this is kind of what you're shaped like. But I think for me, it was tough because as much as there was sometimes that affirmation around, oh, you know, this is normal, it's genetic, as you get older or whatever, like your baby weight and all of that, there was also still that pressure of, you need to lose this weight. Like, and policing the things that I would eat or how I would behave or how I would dress. And it used to feel very like, similarly, it came from like mom, aunties, just random people in church or like family just being like, oh, you need to lose weight, you're getting big. And it's just like, it's really demoralizing when you feel like you can't wear the clothes that you want. You don't feel desirable. Like, I think throughout my life, that's something I've really battled with, this idea of like desirability and not only being, you know, fat or like not only being a plus size woman, but also being dark skinned, also being taller than the average woman. Yeah. Like, just feeling like, oh, boys don't like me. Mm. And I remember, like, I would have my childhood crushes and it would always be unrequited. Oh my God. It's okay, it's and it was so it's painful fine. Because I always had friends who were the object of men's affection. So I was just always that ugly friend. Like, and that's how, again, that was a story I was spinning in my head that always followed me. Like, my friends were always quite either petite or they were fairer than me, complexion, or they were just like perfectly shaped. And it was just like, damn. I was thankful, like, within secondary school, I did have, you know, I think going to an all-girls school helps with this. Yeah. You see a variety of different women and it kind of makes you feel like, oh, okay. But even sometimes the bullying comes from there.
Yeah.
Which can be hard. Like, when women also tell you you're not attractive and you're undesirable, it can be really heartbreaking. And I think growing up, there was always that contention of, I don't think I'm pretty. It's not even, I don't think I'm pretty, because I think I have one of the most amazing
faces. Have a fantastic face.
Thank you very much. But that was the problem, right? Yeah. It was just like, that was everyone's go-to. Your face is so pretty. And it's like, but I am not just my face. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
The rest of me. And the silence there was always like, your body's not. Mm. And I think that's always what I had in my mind. So then, like, growing up, I would do everything, like trying to lose weight, trying to YOLO diet, running, walking, not eating, eating a lot, trying this diet.
Sorry,
trying to do
you remember that era where we were all getting waist trainers?
Absolutely. I had a corset.
I had a corset
with boning. Yeah.
We actually had like problems.
Issues. Deep issues. but things like that, I couldn't even stick to that for long. Couldn't breathe.
Can you believe we used to sit and wear tight corset for 12 to something hours?
At the tender age of 17 years old. It.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Ridiculous.
Oh, like you're actually in the court set of Bridgerton or something.
That's where it all started.
That's where it all started, isn't it? But there was just this like desire to look like the particular thing you thought was attractive. And I think growing up in those tender ages of like maybe 15 to 19 was like the dawn of the BBL era.
Yeah.
So then it's like there is this portrayal of this distinct body that you need to look like, and it doesn't look like me. Mm-hmm. And so I think when I got to 19, I was really struggling with this whole idea of like every time I try to do a weight loss journey, it fails. Mm. Every time I even put in the effort and I do it, I lose weight and then it comes back super quickly. Yeah. And then at 19, I found out I had PCOS, which is like a hormonal imbalance, which makes weight loss really, really hard, actually. And that was also another like really challenging thing to accept in regards to accepting my body, because now it felt like my body was actually working against me and my desire to be desired was being kind of sabotaged by my ovaries' inability to sort itself out.
Get itself together.
And so that was really challenging for me because it kind of felt like I had no hope that I'll ever look like what I think I should. And so I kind of had to start letting go of this idea of what I think I should look like and what I think is desirable. And I think being single for a long time didn't necessarily help for a while because it also felt like I'm single because no one wants me. And so it was just kind of like, you know what? I've got to start reframing this in my mind. I need to stop thinking that my body needs to look a particular way before I deserve to be loved. I need to stop. And I think it's more so I need to stop thinking my body needs to look a certain way before I'm deserving of my love. Right. Like, as much as maybe aunties will never get it and I'll never get the, you know, affirmation, oh, yeah, look, it's so good. Okay, cool. But for me, I can dress in a way, I can speak to myself in a way that suggests I actually love myself.
Yeah.
And similarly, I think faith definitely helped because it was like, okay, God, if you've known me and you if you've known me since before you designed me in my mother's womb and knitted me in my mom's womb, then you knew at 19 I'd be diagnosed with PCOS. You knew this is something that I'd be birthed with. So you knew this would be a part of my story. So I have to trust that you're doing something with it, whether it's something you're teaching me or it's something I'm going through in my own life to be able to help other people.
Yeah.
There has to be some kind of glory you get from this. I think one thing I've been learning about my body has been at whatever size I'm at, it doesn't dictate my value. And I shouldn't be frustrated with myself. Like, I think my body has taught me so much patience. Even like going through a weight loss journey from 2021 and like being able to lose a considerable amount of weight and then plateauing, that was really discouraging because it was like, damn, like I thought I was on my way to being slim.
On your Zoom.
Do you get what I mean? And it was like, oh, okay, cool. Maybe it's just learning that movement isn't just about achieving a particular shape with the desire to be desired. Do you get what I mean? And with the intention of just becoming desirable and attractive. And I love that you mentioned you didn't have the body that people lusted over. I think that was another thing that I had to kind of contend with, which was that as much as I also found men very annoying and I didn't actually want a boyfriend, like I found men very scary. I did want to be lusted over. Like, I wanted to be the object of somebody's affection. And then even thinking that, it's like, I wanted to be sexy. And then I think with faith as well, realizing that, oh, like, this idea of sex appeal, like, where do I stand with it? Which is another conversation for another day, maybe a hot takes episode. But I think what I learned on what I have learned on my journey of evolving and getting older is your body's going to go through so many phases.
Exactly.
And you are in control. Like, despite my like PCOS and having a hormonal imbalance, like, I am in control of my body. I'm in control of what it does. I may not be in control of how it acts every day, but I'm in control of what it eats, how it looks, and like on the outside, on the more controllable parts, but also how I feel about it. Like, I can control my emotions towards it. And so I think nowadays I'm kind of just embracing that, like, there are going to be some days where I look at my body and I think, I don't like that picture, or I don't like how I look in this outfit. So it's now about, you know, being patient and knowing that there will be days where I also look at pictures and I think I do like how I look and I do enjoy the way that I look. But I don't know, it's kind of hard for me to even sometimes talk about this topic, because like even today was a day I woke up and I just thought, like, why is my life like this? Why is my body like this? And as much as there's like, oh, go on a weight loss journey and all of that, I think for me, and this is the last, because I've been hogging the mic the last point that I'll touch on, living in an era where, or living in a time now where like weight loss surgery is a big thing, it is also quite discouraging for me in a way, because it's like, is that my only option? And I've been having way more conversations with friends who are like, you know, they've either done it or they're going to do it, and in my head I'm kind of like, oh, is that like the only route for me? Because I feel like I've tried everything. But then also this is linked to like, and this is just huge vulnerability and oversharing, I think this is linked to my feeling towards, oh, Courtney, you can never be consistent. But then it's like, I've been trying to do so much work on myself on, no, you can be consistent. I don't want to make excuses, but like, this is just the reality. Do you get what I mean? And sometimes you can feel like, oh, maybe this will be the quick fix. Not the quick fix, but like, do you get what I mean? Yeah. Like, this will be the solution to the issues. But then it's also a route I really don't want to go down. Yeah. So then it's like, so do I just have to accept that this will be my body forever? But then there's also like other things that play into why I definitely know I need to like lose weight more, like not rapidly, but with urgency. So
Thank you for sharing that. No worries.
Yeah, I think my relationship with my body has and is still complex. I definitely don't, I think I see myself in a way that's not accurate.
This is true.
But it's quite weird.
This is very true.
It's just quite strange. I think when you've trained yourself to not like yourself, and you society continues to train you to not like you either, and like you're always the butt of jokes, I think that's when it's like, oh, wow, what does it even mean to be a woman? Like, you know, I think even with like femininity content and stuff, I feel like sometimes the way I look, I am the one that they're saying don't be like, you know, don't look like, don't act like, don't sound like. And it's like, but I think I'm pretty dope.
You are.
You know? And it's not in a, I want someone to love me. It's more in a, why is it so radical for me to love myself?
Because society is contingent on how much you can hate yourself, friend.
That's true.
Society profits.
Yeah, it's true. It's just challenging sometimes.
It is.
Because I think people don't often consider like, and I mean, I'm not even the person who's the most like marginalized. I don't think of people with like disabilities or things like that. Like, that's completely, that are completely outside of the desirability picture. Yeah, it must be really challenging. And I know it's challenging for me personally. But I think the question that I wanted to go into is, how has, even though we're talking about your friend that was all, how has, how has friendship and how has sisterhood actually helped you in your journey of self-acceptance and accepting and loving your body?
No, I love that question. I think the biggest way, or one of the main ways for me, is allowing myself to exist outside of a frame that isn't colored with the male gaze or romantic love. I think growing up, this whole idea of the standard of beauty was very much wrapped in desirability by men and desirability just of women in general by men. And I think sisterhood and platonic friendships, and the reason why I'm so passionate about like female friendships, is it allows you to exist in a different plane. It allows you to exist outside of the gaze. Not to say that the gaze doesn't penetrate sometimes, because we know that sometimes women can be the greatest perpetrators of internalized misogyny. However, for those sisters that are keyed into that, for those sisters that genuinely care about you and can lift you up and can support you, those spaces can allow you for a moment to see yourself outside of somebody else's gaze. It allows you to just exist and be happy and be functional. It allows you to just be free as well. Anecdote, but do you remember when we went to Morocco for Jackie's birthday? Oh, shout out our friend Jackie. Oh, guys. So our friend Jackie was having her birthday, and it was,
we went to Marrakesh
and it was a great time. It was one of the few times we were able to get out of the group chat into a plane. So we thank God for journey mercies. And there was
a moment.
Have we done
it since? I don't think as a group we've actually traveled successfully together since.
You know what? No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
We'll work on it. Yeah, there we go. There we go. What a time. What a time. Everybody just decided to continue to do things with their life and whatnot. But we still hang out all the time.
Yeah,
in the UK, you know, cost of living. And there was a moment where we all went to go do the massages, the little hammams and all them things there. And it was such a funny moment because we didn't realize that we had to be naked. We thought it was a bikini or whatnot, or like maybe, you know, we're going in one by one. They were like, no, three or four of you are going in at a time and you have to be naked. I felt like a newborn baby, like literally naked, no pant, no, I don't, is trigger warning necessary? I don't know if people are offended by nakedness, but naked, like, and we were all like oiled up in a non-sexual way, guys, oiled up, ready to enjoy the mists
in
of this steam room, wigless, mind you. I remember I came in an ice blonde bust down courtesy of CDV, had to take that thing off. I felt like I was inside my mother's womb, and I'm there sat like this, titties out, titties looking out. Around. I'm like, Courtney's over there, she butt naked. Yeah, Jackie's over there, she butt naked.
Oh, it was an experience.
It was an experience, but it was such a bonding experience because being able to be naked, not to say that you should just run and go and be naked with your friends. Please, you have to have intimacy.
That's called indecent exposure.
It's called indecent. Please context get consent matters. And whatnot. But in that moment, not feeling those insecurities that you might feel with nakedness in general, not feeling that you were just simply being consumed by a male gaze or consumed by somebody's eye, actually just in this quite awkward, random situation with your friends where you are completely naked, almost to me symbolized the nakedness of sisterhood.
Yeah.
The fact that there is nothing to hide here and I don't need to feel uncomfortable here, because as much as we're different, there's so much sameness that we share. You're there, titties out. I'm there, titties out. She's there, butt naked. I'm there, butt naked. There's nowhere to run.
Yeah.
But not just that there's nowhere to run. There's no need to run. And that level of comfort in sisterhood is so important for women. To know that you exist outside of being consumed by someone. To know that you exist outside of having to perform for someone. To know that you can just simply exist is something that I wish for every single woman. You can exist outside of somebody else's gaze.
Yeah, so
and I think sisterhood has been so pivotal in giving me the permission to exist. It's also been a great comforter when, you know, things are not going well, when I have been consumed by the male gaze and I've been hurt or maimed as a result of coming into contact with that, right? Sisterhood can be such a protective force for women that have poor body issues.
Absolutely.
You know, how often do we often feel like down about ourselves or the way that we look, and we say, sis, how am I looking? And you're like, girl, you look fine.
Yeah,
like you're actually you're good looking. You look cute. And you can live a life that doesn't have to be dictated by how society wants you to appear all the time. And I think sisterhood is important in this regard because it makes you feel seen. Like, your sisters see you, your friends see you, and they see your body and they see your physicality, but they also see the spirit that resides within the body, the spirit that resides inside.
That's so good.
Because one of my favorite quotes is, your body is the only place you have to live. How can you live in a place that you despise? It is the worst feeling. It's almost like being trapped inside yourself.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about sisters and friends and their affirmation that pulls you out of that dark pit that sometimes body dysmorphia or having hang-ups about your body can lead you to.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that I'll say is, having friends, sisters, women in general gives you a realistic understanding of our bodies in general, right? There's so much variety in the experience of women and their bodies. Our older friends that have had kids, not even our older friends, child, our age mates that have had kids. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking, I'm 27. My friends, they got kids, multiple. Our friends that have had kids, our friends that have been through menopause, our friends that, you know, have gone through very big life-changing you know, experiences that have impacted their bodies.
Yeah.
Having that wealth of experience, having those types of women in the vicinity, it helps me remember that this is normal. Because when we look at social media, when we look at everything that's desirable, you have all of these experiences that do not fit into this. You have all of these real life women, real life bodies that just don't fit into this at all. And it's that affirmation that actually it's okay. This is what you're going to experience. It's okay that, you know, when you have a kid, you don't have to snap back like straight away. It's okay that, you know, when you go through menopause, you're going to have hot flashes and all that kind of jazz. It's okay that if you're going through any kind of issues with your body, hormonal contraceptives, hormonal imbalances, this is what it looks like. So I think sisterhood has also been pivotal in giving me representation of real women's bodies, what it feels like and what it actually looks like to inhabit a woman's body across the span of her lifetime.
Yeah, that's really good. I really enjoyed that. I think similarly, the same stuff, like I would say the big thing for me has also been knowing that my friends are there to support me no matter what I choose, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
What I say, I think sometimes people think women are just out here doing, oh my gosh, girl, you look so good. But I really think it's nice to also have friends when you say, I don't feel so good, who don't just bombard you or almost gaslight you to point where, no, you look so nice. So get that out of your mind. Nah. I know how I feel and I know why I feel it.
What's the problem with you look so good?
Oh my gosh, the babe sis. Oh my gosh, no. Fire emoji, heart. Oh my God, the baddest beat to ever live. Babes,
yeah.
All these other, you know.
You're a baddie, like, babes. You're a baddie, babes. You're a baddie.
First of all, no, I'm fat. Like, I am. And it doesn't mean I'm not those things. Like, because I also think there's this, like, there's this thing that people get into habit. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I feel I'm not happy with my size right now. No, my gosh, you're so beautiful. I didn't say that. First of all, I said this is a weight issue. So you can unlearn that.
Right. No, that's quite so clearly. Funny. She said, whoa, I still think that I'm the ish.
Hold on a minute. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, that's I don't want so people funny. Who just feel like, no, this affirmation looks like telling me that my insecurities are not valid or telling me that my insecurities should not exist. I think it's more so I need support, not just affirmation. Yeah. Affirmation is good, it's my top love language. But I think support is a different thing, whether that's a listening ear or one thing that you do, which is so encouraging, is when I'm like, okay, Renee, like I want to go back to the gym or I want to figure out like my macros and stuff. Like you lend that knowledge to me because that's your world. That's what you enjoy. So it's like nice to have someone who's like, okay, that's what you want to do. Let's think together, you know, bouncing off ideas. Is this the best thing for you to do? But then also how can you go about doing it and how can I be supportive on that journey, whatever it looks like. Similarly, when I'm not feeling gym, there's that, you know, support of, okay, you know, let me hold you accountable, you can do it. But then also let me hear out why. Like, is it are you tired, are you exhausted, are you feeling pain, like even today, like telling you that I'm having like a PCOS flare up at the moment, it's like, oh okay, how do I support you through that, like understanding your body. So I think there's something so beautiful about the intimacy of sisterhood and how that allows you to be seen in such a vulnerable and, like you said, naked way, but also people's response to that. Because I think even like to that hammam experience, we don't then start, you know, poking and prodding, oh, you look like this, I look like this. There's no comparison, there's no judgment, there's no even reference to the past in a negative way. It's just very, I accept you for who you are.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And however you need me to show up for you, I will show up for you. So I think one big role that sisterhood has played for me in my body in my journey with my body has been around support and people just offering that listening ear in that sense. But I also love that you said that when you have friendships in real life with real women, you realize that women look different, right? A real woman's body is not one thing. There's no universal look. And as much as, you know, I have friends, so I'm like, damn, you look so good.
Real rap.
Do you get what
some
I mean?
Girls, I'm no better than a man.
Oh my gosh.
No better than a man.
The female gaze. You look so good.
You look yummy.
Oh my gosh.
Like, let me guess up. Listen, do you ever have the... Maybe this is a hot take, but I'm like, do you ever have those moments where you're like, wow, God knew what he was doing when he made me a female? Because if I was a guy, I'd be out here.
Absolutely. Hoeing like a whore. Hoeing like a whore.
Because some women
are just built.
Women are just tasty, crafted. Man.
But it's like, as much as I have friends that I look at and think, damn, those friends also don't make me feel like I'm not that either. Yeah. Like I'm not pretty.
Yeah.
And so I think it's also being around friends who see you for more than just the surface level.
Yeah.
And having sisterhood that is, that runs so much deeper than the superficial.
Yeah.
Because then it helps you to know that, like, no, you're a worthwhile person more than just what you look like, but I love you for you. And yes, I can appreciate how you look, but also beyond that level, I just really rock with you and who you are. That has also been really, really encouraging and affirming as well. And then I guess sometimes, on that superficial level, my friends let me know, girl, you look so good.
Yep.
And that makes me feel good as well. Cause it's like, wow, cause I thought so too, but it's glad. I'm glad to know someone else is thinking the same thing as me. Damn, I am looking good today, you know? So that's also really affirming on a more positive note. So I guess to cap it off for this episode, I wanted to talk about divesting from the male gaze. Yep. And we touched on this in a hot takes episode about how a lady was saying that self-love is not a replacement for like romantic love. And so to the sisters listening, how do you balance this desire to be desired with self-acceptance? Not that the two are mutually exclusive, but sometimes people position it as one can cancel out the other. So how should they go about navigating it, especially in relation to divesting from the male gaze?
Divesting from the male gaze. I think it's a tough one because the male gaze is so intertwined with a lot of the things that we do, especially as it pertains to our bodies, that once you realize how much it's impacting you, it can be very scary. The male gaze, patriarchy, the way that we view our bodies is so intertwined and mixed in with almost everything that we do, that I think the first thing that you need to do is recognize how it's impacting you. Where is it impacting you as well? And how potentially harmful is it? So when we think about Jim, Jim is a really good example because we did have a dilemma in our inbox a while ago, there was a babe who was talking about, oh, you know, I'm personally a Christian, but I find myself going to the gym. I'm doing like the hip thrust, the emphasis on the lower body. Like, to what extent? She wants to work the glutes. To what extent am I focusing on functionality and health versus aesthetics? Now, everything is all about balance. So the first thing you want to do is identify, in what ways is the male gaze affecting the way I see myself? Is it affecting the way that you dress? Is it affecting the, you know, exercises that you choose? Is it the core reason for you doing what you do? It becomes a problem when it is the core.
Right.
When you go to the gym or you decide to exercise or you decide to take care of yourself or you start a journey, if the male gaze or desirability is your core reason for doing it, then it's unsustainable and it will never work. It can be a factor. And I think a lot of people, that's where we get the whole, oh, these things are mutually exclusive and you can't have one without the other. No, if you are somebody that likes men or if you want to be desired, I think there is something quite attractive to most people that you are willing to put in the work to take care of yourself. But the core focus should really be on, how are you taking care of yourself? How are you loving yourself? How are you investing in yourself? That behavior, that action, not necessarily the product, which is what you look like, that those actions and those behaviors are more attractive than the product, in my opinion. Because we're so focused on getting the aesthetics, we don't realize that it's actually the functionality, it's the habits, it's the mindset that's more attractive. We're looking that's at the so fruit good. And we're focusing on the fruit, but most people are actually attracted to the means. So focusing on the means, because you can arrive at a product in different ways, but whether the product will stand will always depend on the means. So there's so many people out here that may, you know, look very aesthetically pleasing, but it's an unsustainable endeavor that they've embarked on because they've been so focused on the product and not the means. They've really been so focused on just appealing to the male gaze that it's so unsustainable that they'll crash and eventually, you know,
they won't have the results.
They won't have the results. They won't be able to sustain the product. So really focusing on the means, focusing on the mindset shift,
that's so good.
Focusing on loving yourself, focusing on how God sees you is super, super important. So when it comes to like divesting from the male gaze, it's like, okay, what, these are the ways that it's impacting me. I'm finding myself doing very unhealthy things in order to achieve a product of looking a certain way, being a certain way, being desirable. and then starting to repair that damage, right? So whether it be therapy, I know we talk about therapy a lot on this podcast, but even as it pertains to how you see yourself functionally, physically, it may be worth going to therapy.
Counseling.
Get counseling. Mm-hmm. Body dysmorphia is a real thing. Yeah. You can get a clinical diagnosis for these things. And sometimes we don't realize just how far it's gone because we don't see it as something that's serious enough. And the way that we see ourselves functionally, physically, is just as important as how we are, you know, feeling it mentally, emotionally, because those things are linked, right? The way that we feel about ourselves physically is so linked to our emotions, the way that we are internally.
Yeah.
So going to therapy, actually trying to figure out, what is my relationship like with my body?
Yeah.
How do I see my body? Do I operate from a place of self-love, or do I operate from a place of self-hate? Am I punishing myself? Do I see myself going and exercising, or, you know, eating well as a punishment because I want to get to a product or something that is intrinsic to me honoring and respecting my body? And starting to focus on repairing your relationship with your body. This is about you and you, not you and the world, not you and the gaze. It's you and you. You need to focus on your gaze upon your body before you focus on the male gaze on your body. And then even listing out your insecurities. One exercise that I love to do is, we're so quick to list out our insecurities. So do that, but also start affirming yourself. Like, what are the things that you like about yourself? And if you struggle, that's one of the biggest signs that you have a poor relationship with your body. Like, off the bat, off the top of my head, if you were to ask me, oh, Renee, what do you like about your body? I like how strong I am. I like that I have really nice legs. I like the fact that I can actually run now. That's really exciting for me. I like my face. Like, things like being able to compliment yourself is such a big way that you can divest from the male gaze, because you're not waiting on validation from other people to assert that you are beautiful. And even physically, because oftentimes when we're like, oh, self-love, we think about the internal stuff, right? We think about, oh, you know, I'm kind, which is important, but also physically, do you like yourself? Are you happy with your features? So get into the habit of actually complimenting yourself and repairing your relationship with the body that you inhabit.
Quick question on that though, and this may be like kind of a hot take, but like, do you feel like that's easier for you to do now because to some degree you have a body that you really like, and like, you're on the other side of that, like, development journey, if that makes sense? Not in a negative sense.
I hear that. I think that's a very realistic take. I think yes, but more so because, less so because of the way that I look, because there was a point where I had gotten the product, but I still felt really bad about myself. And there's a whole bunch of people, even when I think of like, I listen to a lot of like bodybuilders journeys for like women, and a lot of them look extremely beautiful, like
amazing
figures, but they were constantly pointing out like their insecurities and stuff like that. And they were like the smallest of the small, like they were the petite babes that people really looked at and desired. I think there is an element of recognizing, okay, to an extent, I'm on the other side of that development journey, but it's more so making peace with the fact that I'm actually doing the work because I've decided to like myself. Because there's entirely too many people that, even some of the people that we think, oh my gosh, they're at the pinnacle of their like body, right? Or even like the girls that we look at, we're like, oh, you are so peng, like you probably have no insecurities. It's often the women that are at the pinnacle of their physical game that have the most insecurities. And it's something that a lot of girlies in, like, especially the gym babes, a lot of them struggle with body dysmorphia. And I think it's because when you get to the absolute pinnacle, the peak of what you think is desirable, you realize, ah, there's still a gap between myself and the pinnacle of being the most desired. It's almost like catch 22. The goalposts keep on moving anyways. So if anything, the closer and closer you think you're getting to being desirable, the further and further you are, because now you can see so clearly where your insecurities are. So I think there has to be a conscious decision to like yourself at some point. Irrespective of where you're at in your journey, you have to make the decision to like yourself. And then you have to make the commitment to showing up as that person every single day. So whether, there's definitely days I wake up and I'm like, damn, you know, my stomach leaking over, my gut leaking over. Or like, you know, it'll be holiday season and I've eaten too much, and I have a picture of my body at its peak, and I can see, oh my gosh, I've changed, or I have these insecurities now, it's the conscious decision that despite of this reality, I'm going to like myself.
Yeah.
And because I know that I have invested in myself, whether it be through, you know, the regularity of exercise, or not even that, right? Just even doing things that I know are helping me,
yeah,
I've decided to like myself. Yeah. Even the, what I love about what you're doing right now is the step challenge. That's keeping me accountable. Because one thing about me is I'm going to get to 8K and call it a day. Now, fam, when I saw that 23K on Goodies, I said, yo, yo, I need to be outside. There will be times where Courtney will come and catch me and I'm just walking around, or like vice versa. I said, nah, girl, I saw that 15K on your Instagram stories. I got to get walking. But that conscious decision, because I know that I've put in the work, that conscious decision, because I know that I respect my body. And also understanding the goals that you have for yourself as well can be a really great way to divest from the male gaze, right? So it's not just about aesthetics, but it's also about functionality. One thing that I found really helpful, and I think a lot of women should do, obviously I'm a researcher, so naturally I like finding out this information, but like how to take care of your body and why it's actually important outside of being desirable, right? It's actually important to have a body that you can inhabit, because you reduce your risk of a whole bunch of like illnesses, where whether it be, you know, diabetes. That's something that runs in my family. And I've seen how it's impacted my my lineage. I've seen how it's impacted a lot of people around me. And I don't want that for myself, but I also don't want that for my future family. So having goals that are not just oriented around the way that you look, but actually oriented around the environment that you want to cultivate, the person that you want to be, the example that you want to leave to other people, has been really helpful for me in zooming out of the male gaze and focusing in on why it's actually important to show up physically.
That's so good.
That's what I would say.
But I really like that. That was a good way to kind of put it. And I hope that's helpful for everyone who was listening, man. I really like having conversations like this with you, because I feel like I'm just not there yet. But it's nice to hear the journey. And then hopefully I'll be there at some point.
Girl, are you on your way?
Yeah, I hope so.
No, you are actually on your
way. I hope so.
Guys.
I think it's like that, like almost becoming less obsessed about like weight loss, aesthetics, and looking like this so that people can view me like this. Because I think it's been tough, like when you end up in your mid-20s and you're still not at your dream body, and you know it, like it's not baby weight. It's not, it can't be. I'm nearly 27, it can't be.
But you know what? There's also that side of life, right? Where you get into your 20s, your late 20s, your early 30s, and what was working for a lot of people that were slimmer anyways, a lot of it's folks end up putting, anymore. Exactly, it's not working anymore. So it's not even just the baby weight now, it's the, oh my gosh, I actually need to make sure that I have a blueprint here, because as I get older, sorry, spoiler alert to those of you guys that have been eating junk, your metabolism slows down. Your collagen production slows down as well. Your joints are not as lubricated. It's even more important for you to drink water and eat well. So I think it's the being kind to yourself as well, in that you have really great healthy habits that I think will sustain. It will sustain you a lot more.
That's what I was going to say. Like it's right now, like my focus has been like just habits. What can my body do versus how does my body look? Because I've realized that like to some degree, there's still so much of my body that I don't understand. And so it's just trying to just treat it well and get it to do things which for some people may seem really mundane, like, and super easy, but for me has not been easy. Like to stay consistent with walking 10K steps is like a really, it's something that I found very challenging. So it's even that, like being able to walk, being able to eat well, and like not binging. And I think it's less so looking at the big picture and now looking at like the smaller things and being proud of myself for that. Cause I think there are certain things which younger Courtney would definitely have thought like I could never do. And I just like that now that I'm older, whilst I may not look like how younger Courtney would have wanted me to look. Sorry, girl. I am definitely doing things, like you said, the healthy habits that she probably wouldn't have thought what's possible, because like when I was younger, I was doing a lot of like emotional eating, feeling like I had to just eat more. But now it's like, okay, I can at least distinguish between this is healthy for me, this isn't healthy for me, and I think my body deserves what is healthy for me. Or, you know, even going and getting my PCOS diagnosis and living in a way that's conscious of the fact that, like, you know, manage your stress levels, sleep better, drink more water, like you were saying, healthy habits, drink more water, take your myo-inositol, like talk to people, and all the holistic well-being. Like holistic well-being has been a big thing for me over the last couple of years, so it's just nice to know I'm on the way. It's just sometimes sad to accept that it'll take longer than I wanted it to. But we are here, man.
God is good. The things that are worth having often take the longest time.
But yeah, man, sis, we hope that this was helpful. We hope that you actually enjoyed this episode. As always, you can follow our personal glowing and growing journeys to see my baby killing it at the gym and me just posting my Apple Watch as I try to get my life together.
Courtney just underrates herself so completely.
Just trying to stay up.
She said, I'm just hitting with the kids, you know, hanging with the kids.
Let's hope I make my 20K steps today. South Africa is going to be a whole different challenge. It's going to be a whole different challenge. But I've done it before. I could do it again.
There you go.
But yeah, keep up with our personal growing and growing journeys. You can follow my best friend at Renee Kapuku. You can follow me at CD Boating. And you can follow the TMS world, literally, at To My Sisterhood on pretty much every platform.
Everything.
Follow us on LinkedIn as well, To My Sisters. Check out our book, as we mentioned at the beginning of this episode. And sign up to the mailing list so you can get weekly glowing and growing tips.
You have to.
We know that topics like this can be quite sensitive and very personal, but as a community, we want to kind of equip you with a lot of resources. So sign up to the mailing list for this week's newsletter with some goodies for you as you are on this journey of accepting your body and loving yourself. So you can sign up to the mailing list at tomysisters.com. That's on our website. And we'll see you very, very, very soon. The next episode will be us back.
Yeah, we'll be back. We'll be back.
That will be
we're gonna be looking brown and all dewy and all that.
That will be in real time. By God's grace, we come with just amazing stories to tell. But yeah, what a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. Yeah, oh, hallelujah. That heavy on the alive. Heavy on the alive.
So yeah, sisters, we love you. And as always,
keep glowing and growing.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.